You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Welcome to the Essential Apple Podcast, where we talk about Apple and all the Apple-related news and anything else that catches our eye. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Essential Apple. And this week, I'm pleased to say we have a guest, so it's not just me and Nick, especially as the news is not especially exciting, especially if you're not a US lawyer, in which case you might be frothing about it. But Nick and I are rolling our eyes and groaning, to be honest. So we have a guest, and our guest is Matt, who is the co-founder and CTO of Cyme, which is C-Y-M-E, who you can find at cyme.io. And he's going to talk to us about, his company, their history and their product. So welcome, Matt.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. I know we had a few false starts with the accidental cross bookings and so on, and of course I'm sure I told Claudia it was GMT, but it was some time ago. She might have forgotten to tell you. So I got a frightened message before the show saying, what time are we doing it? It's 5 o'clock here. But there we go. It's all sorted. So we're all here now. And of course Nick is here. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Simon. Yes, I'm here as usual. But I'm glad we got another guest, because you're right, there wasn't that much to talk about.
Not anything that interests us very much, no. Not the most interesting of Mac news, really, but there we go. So, we'll start off. So, hello, Matt, and welcome to the show. And please introduce yourself and your company and your products, and we'll talk about that.
Hi, and thanks again for having me tonight. So my full name is Matthew, but Matt is fine. I'm the co-founder of a company called Cyme, as you explained, which is a company based in France. We are a fully remote company with people working wherever they want to work. And we gather every month in Montpellier, which is the south of France. By the sea, and we have our sort of workshops there, and we build software for the Mac. Previously, I've been doing software for the Mac for the past 20 years. My first company was called Aquafadas, and with the same people that are now working in Cyme, more or less, and we build software to gather and catalog videos, and then we built animation software, and then we moved to digital comics just when the iPhone came out. Actually, even before the iPhone came out, we had some software running on iPhones and on iPods and to read comic books on small screens. And then the company developed to do digital media, magazines and stuff. So we did less things on the Mac and more on the iPhone and on the iPad when the iPad came out. Yeah, it was a big thing. And then this company grew and was acquired by a Canadian company called Kobo, which was doing tablets and e-ink readers. And after a while, we left and we started Cyme in 2019, I think, with a focus on building software for photographers. So this is the sort of story of the company. The main idea was, and every time I've tried to think about what products I want to build, I've looked at the problems I was having myself. And one of my problems in 2019 and even before was that I had a lot of pictures and they were scattered in many places, in many apps that I had used in all my history as a photographer. And I had photos everywhere and on hard drives and I had copies because I wanted to make backups on those images. I don't know if this is something that speaks to you, but if you talk with people and you talk about digital photography, it's sooner or later you start talking about digital mess, because a lot of people are having a problem with getting out of control. And what we realized as well was that a lot of people were very frustrated by the kind of state of failure in which they were when it came to their photos and managing their photos. So we decided to think about a product that would help people gather all those images without creating new copies, because sometimes you already have too many copies, but trying to be able to gather those images and to organize them and get rid of the ones that were not needed and get this bird eye view on your pictures. Okay, so this was the idea, and the product was pretty ambitious. The product is called Picto, but we didn't start by building this product, because it would take a few years. Instead, we started by building a smaller product called Avalanche, which was for us a way to release something into the world of photographers on Mac, that could help us start build the name and the brand and everything around the company before Picto was ready to be released. And so Avalanche is a product that solves a very, very particular problem that some people have. It's the fact that sometimes they want to change the app in which they gather all their images. So, and the reason this happens is that there are several reasons why you might want to change apps. First of all, because there are new apps coming out that have, and especially with AI, there are new apps with very specific editing capabilities. If you take an app like Luminar, for example, Luminar Neo, it has great AI-powered features, and some people are really attracted to actually moving their stuff to this new app. Or sometimes people are fed up with the business model of the app they're using. And one of the examples was when Adobe moved to subscriptions, a lot of people got really angry and wanted to move away. Yeah. So this is a specific problem. You have all your photos in an app, and then you want to move to another app, and you don't want to lose the work that you've done in the annotation work, the organization, building albums, but also all the edits that you've done. And Avalanche has this capability to actually move everything to a new home without losing all the edits. So it actually transforms the edits that you have, say, in Apple Photos or in Aperture or in Lightroom, and converts them into edits that make the photo look the same, or the rendering of the photo look the same in the new app. So this is quite revolutionary at the time.
It rather reminds me of going back quite a long time to when I used to own an Acorn Archimedes, which is way back. When someone actually invented, at that time, it was very difficult to sort of sometimes always get the type of images that you wanted into a certain app, because it would only accept PNGs, or it would only accept TIFFs. And I remember there was a program I used at that time which sat almost like as part of the operating system, and just did the conversion for you in the background, so you didn't have to think about it.
Yeah.
And this sounds better than that. and also, obviously, you know, I can imagine it would save huge amounts of time for people.
Yes, especially if you invested so much time into annotating, and then it's sometimes a heartbreaker that you have to move away from an app that you... I mean, a good example is Aperture. This app was loved by so many people, and Apple just stopped it, and then people were just feeling like they were orphaned. And they were alone in the dark, and they had all their photos there. And we still have people that have all their photos in Aperture and are thinking now of moving them out. I mean, just imagine how long they've been keeping a Mac with an old system, with a running version. I mean, you're talking Mac OS 10.14 or something like that. At the moment, we are at Mac OS 14. So it's crazy. This is a business model for an app where, and there are many apps. I mean, there are many apps like that where you want to do something that is absolutely crucial, and the fact that there is an app that does it is just a lifesaver. We've been very very happy with the the reviews that we've gotten for Avalanche, because it really solves a great problem, and we'll continue to make it evolve, and there's going to be a new version this year with new capabilities. So Avalanche was a way to have a product after a year or so and start communicating around photography and preparing the public for Picto. We've been trying from the start to have something really peculiar, which is have a blog where we don't talk about our products, but we talk about photography, about photographers, and we try to have an interview of some photographers that are not super famous yet, but that do something really, really amazing. And so if you go to our blog on sign.io, you'll see some things that are just truly unbelievable in terms of the quality of the work that is done by photographers. And we talk about their process, their workflows, the app, the apps they use, etc. But also all the process of the creative process. And I think we're very proud of this aspect of the company as well, to find some gems in the world. Then we re-released Picto in 2022, I think, in June, and this app is designed to be this central hub where you can connect all your content, whether it lives on drives, in folders, whether it's in Apple Photos, whether it's in Lightroom, and Picto has some clever tools to first of all gather without making copies. We read all those formats natively, so we can read and write Lightroom catalogs and Capture One and Lumina and whatever. And so this foundation work that we built for Avalanche is now running at full speed in Picto. And then in Picto, we introduced a number of features that were quite unique at the time, which was, for example, the ability to search in photos in photos that you didn't annotate. So you could search, you can search a photo, find a girl playing on the beach, at sunset, it will find all pictures of a girl playing at the beach at sunset, even though you haven't annotated anything. So it just uses AI to recognize
what's in your picture. That's brilliant. I mean, for people like me who are absolutely rubbish at labeling anything, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it goes with the fact that, until a few years ago, the only way to get organized was to put things in boxes or to add labels and to add titles, and it's really, really time consuming. And some people still need to do that. If you're taking pictures of birds and stuff, you might want to really annotate with the exact name of the bird and et cetera. But for 90%, maybe 99% of the people, you just want to find a picture. And I don't know if you've tried that on your iPhone, for example, but if you look for something that's really, really specific, you don't find it.
Yeah, I was only trying that yesterday. I said to someone, I've got a picture of that. Could I find it?
Did you find it? I certainly couldn't.
Yeah. So this is impossible. It doesn't work. Because the iPhone, I mean the Apple Photo app is doing some stuff, but some stuff is really clever, like recognizing text, etc. But if you look for something, an object or something, it doesn't work. So in Picto, this works brilliantly, and we decided to create an iPhone app to do exactly the same. So we created last year an app called Find My Snap, which is on the iPhone, on the iPad, and on the Mac as well. So it just looks at your Apple Photo library, it indexes it pretty fast. And then you can do that search. And if you search for something, like yesterday you were searching for something, if you try it on Find My Snap, I'm sure you will find it. It's amazing how precise it is. And then we also, Find My Snap is another of our product that is a derivative of Picto, if you want, but just for people who only have their photos in Apple Photos on their iPhone or on their Mac. And then we thought, sometimes you want to search for something because you really want to show something to someone. But sometimes you just want to see something. You want to be surprised by what you already have. And probably you receive those memories and things from Apple every morning. It tells you about some stuff that it has prepared for you. Like 2 years ago, you took this picture, or it creates these little slideshows. But after a while, it's more or less the same stuff, right? And so we decided to create prompts for you. So in Find My Snap, you have a little magic button. If you don't know what to search for, you can just tap on this button. And we come with about a few thousands of prompts that you would never think of. Some of them will produce maybe some results that are not great, but some of them, and we hope the majority of them, will produce results and will show you pictures that you've completely forgotten. And what's cool is that it shows them on a grid with pictures that are related. So, for example, you would have a prompt about a very basic prompt. It would be, for example, abstract architecture. That's a sort of a really serious prompt. You would probably never type abstract architecture as a search on your phone. But if you do that, then you will see images of architecture. And it's not just one image that is interesting. It's the fact that it puts them on a grid, and then you have this assembly, this mosaic of images that builds something new. So this is cool because you discover new images or images that you had forgotten about, but also it creates a composition with those images. And then some other prompts are really completely crazy, and you would never type them, but they can produce results that are really surprising. So yeah, that's a product that we are really pleased with as well, called Find My Snap. So it's all based on search. Yeah. And I think it's one of the things we want to try to do with the pictures. We don't want to just organize them or help you organize them. Sure, it's really important, and we want to help you remove stuff as well. But one of the key ideas we had was also to help you rediscover images that you had forgotten, simply because we would create new windows on your collection, which is not the grid, which is sorted by time, which is the basic stuff, but a grid that is maybe sorted by points of view. So Picto, for example, creates these windows where you can see your architecture images, your street photography images, and you've never labeled any photography like to be street photography, but it will recognize that, and then it will put them together, and you will find stuff that you had forgotten about. So that's one of the thing that sort of fuels us to create discovery and excitement about the stuff that you already have. You know.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I'm very impressed.
I'm obviously while you're talking, Matt, I'm you know, scanning through your site, and I'm looking at these explore all your photos in one place, unify preview and organize your images effortlessly, automatic categorization. I can see it here. Obviously, there's a little sort of scrolling window saying architecture, wildlife, nature, automobiles, food. So it can find all those things for you that way and create excellent things. And then I did quite like, because I'm not a serious photographer by any stretch. In fact, I hardly take any photographs. I'm notorious for it. But I'm looking at this, I'm looking at Find My Snap, and there's some quite, I see here you've got, so like you're talking about the suggestions. So you've got one here that says Yellow Pleasures, where it's made a mosaic of photos which are mostly yellow.
Yes, it's pretty cool, because, and then you have this export functionality where you don't export just one picture, but we export the mosaic, which is like a new composition. It's like a collage of things that are related. One image in itself is nice, but it's the collage of 9 or 12 of them on a specific subject. That's cool. And sometimes you have an image that you have 8 images that are really matching the query that you entered or that we entered for you, and one that is sort of slightly off, but that's the one that's interesting. You know, that's like the one that makes the whole thing really cool and really funny. So we are pleased with that. This week we are going to release a new product again around search, and it's maybe more for the serious photographer, but it's a plugin for Lightroom, which works really, really differently from all the other plugins that you've seen, because it's always on, and it's a way to search using the same techniques in your Lightroom catalogs. So either by a prompt or from an image. You can take an image from the web and say, just drag into the plugin and say, do I have some pictures that are similar to this one? or you want to find you know that you have pictures that were taken in a similar place, and you just grab an image from this place, you drag it in the thing, and it finds all your pictures. And this search engine is currently used by people who have hundreds of thousands of images, and it works brilliantly, and it's such a powerful tool to find stuff. And to be able to do stuff, to do things with the things that you find.
I must admit, I do love speaking to people who have, to use a UK phrase, who have found found an itch and they've scratched it.
Yeah, definitely.
And they've actually sort of found a way of sort of, as you said, it was a pain point for you. And therefore, that's what started it all. You realize that it was a pain point for lots of people.
Yes.
That's the reason for you being. And I think that's brilliant.
Yeah,
you
always need to add some fun to it, because and that's one of the things that we always keep thinking about. Because, you know, telling someone to tidy their room is not the greatest message that you can have as a company, you know. So of course you want to help people tidy their stuff, because there is this, as I explained, this notion of failure, but not being able to master the and then you just stop looking at your picture and you keep taking more. So we both want to help people, but we also want to make something out of this, not just clean and organized. We want to create some fun. We want to create things. And currently we are a bit focused on the helping people to find stuff and to be more in control, because they know they have things that they want to use and they can't really find it, or it's not as snappy like that, right? But later on, we also want to build the tools to make stuff with it, because there is a lot of sense to actually create stories. And you know, there's one thing that I've noticed, and sometimes it makes me think quite a lot, because for example, I have pictures of my friends' kids, and they don't know about it. It's quite sad if you think about it, because I took them at a point of time where, okay, and then I moved to something else, and I have those pictures, and they don't know. And being able to share them, or to create something with it, or to just share them, and just to be reminded that I do have these things that I could share, and it would create something really positive if those friends would receive those pictures, because they have no idea that I have them, and they probably and maybe some friends, they don't take so many pictures of their kids, and you know, they would love to have them. So
and they're great for shared experiences as well. I have taken over the years. I've been part of a walking group.
Okay.
And we don't do long walks, but we've walked very regularly for the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I've taken lots and lots of photos while we've been out walking. And they love looking at those photographs. You know, when we get together as a group, and I'll just have these photographs rolling in a loop. And being able to find them all very quickly would just make my life very much easier than having to search through this big catalogue of stuff that, I mean, I haven't got a huge catalogue like a professional would have, but I've got enough photos that it can be frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people have 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 photos. It's already a lot.
If you think about like Mac Jim, you know, or Alistair, who are...
They're regular taking photos. They,
you know, they are seriously, you know, photography is sort of a fairly serious hobby for them.
Hmm.
And
I've got 13,401,
which is
not huge, but
no, not huge.
As I say, but it's still, there are times, like as I said yesterday, where I know I've got that photo somewhere.
What's amazing with these prompt searches is that the more words you put, the more precise it becomes. And so if you really remember something quite precisely, it will find it. It might not the first image or the second, but who cares, because it's going to display a grid, and it's like in Google, you'll find it maybe in the second row, or as a third image or fourth image. Sometimes it's the first. That's cool. And so I was saying we are building this. We will be releasing this plugin for Lightroom. And there is something really, really amazing in what's going to come out is that we're going to support videos as well.
Oh, cool.
And so you're going to be able to type something, a search prompt, like, I want to find this girl playing on the beach at sunset. And it will find the video, and it will point in the video what are the frames where you have that. Because you might have a panorama, you know, you're scanning the beach, and then you're starting with the waves and the boats that are in the distance, and then the city, and then you end up looking at the girl at the end. And so it's going to find it, and it's going to point exactly to the frames where you have that. That's going to be amazing, I think.
Yeah, sounds.
So we're quite looking forward to release that and to move a little bit more into this field of video.
Excellent. And I'm just looking at some of the features here in Beat 2. I mean, this would mean nothing to me, but it would mean a lot to somebody like Alistair. For instance, find images sharing common characteristics such as your ISO setting or your lens. That, you know, I can imagine if you're a serious photographer, you know, pro or not, being able to say, you know, find everything that I took with my big zoom lens.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
So these are common workflows. You start with an image and you say, oh, the basic one is, oh, show me all the image taken on that day. So they share the same characteristic, which is the date. But you could say, show me all the images that have similar content. Like you're looking at a bird and you would it immediately find all the images that are similar, showing the same kind of bird. It's really powerful to actually get all these ways into your all these points of view into your photo library if you're
not only that, but I mean Apple's stuff is great, but it doesn't always present the stuff that you'd like it to be the way you'd like it to be presented as well. I mean, I'm not actually looking at the app itself, but I'm looking at your web pages, and this looks just the kind of thing that I would imagine a lot of people would find really useful, and presented in a way that is just so much more accessible. I mean, sometimes seeing something by date is great because that's just what you want, but it's not always what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying at least to be innovative in the way we show things. Yeah.
I've definitely found myself in the situation, the exact situation that you were talking about with trying to find stuff that, I mean, say Apple have helped themselves by putting some basic searching in, and that's great, but it's not just searching it, it's presenting it in a way that's really useful.
Yes.
Beyond that. So, yeah.
I can only encourage you to try Find My Snap, because it's...
that does sound very good.
Try that and tell us what you think. Anyway, it's a great subject, photography, because obviously it's very visual, and you can create amazing user interface. It's hard because people are very demanding, and their pictures are very crucial to them. So you have to present them well. You have to do a lot of things really well. And we have some users that have over a million pictures in the system. So it has to be super fast. You have lots of problems. And we didn't realize at the beginning when we said our promise is to gather everything. So we'll just connect everything. And then people have just done that. You just plugged all their drives and say, scan everything. And of course, you can imagine how much power and how many problems we encountered, because people just said, I've scanned everything, but now I have so many pictures. How do I get all that?
Yes. But, it's a little bit like I used to work in statistics and working with data, really. And quite often, if we were being shown a new tool, they'd always show you a small subset and say, look how fast it is. And then as soon as you threw, you know, tens of millions of data points at it, suddenly it became incredibly slow and almost unusable.
So it's the kind. I mean, that's the in the early days we were definitely in that situation where we didn't expect people to throw hundreds of thousands of images into the system or millions. It was tough, but I think we are now in a situation where and to be honest, we've been helped by the Apple M chips. They make such a difference. Not so much in the the sort of building apps that are fast and stuff, but as everything that has to do with AI is sometimes 100 times faster than on an Intel Mac. It's
wow.
Just unbelievable how fast how slow it is on an Intel and how fast it is through because of the neural engine.
The neural engine, yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes it's you don't really get that when you look at all these Apple presentations. A neural engine has so many cores and it's 2 times faster. But I can tell you when you scan a library of a user and you actually create all that data that can be searched, going from 8 milliseconds or going from 300 milliseconds per image to 8 milliseconds per image, which is about the ratio that we've experienced.
Wow.
Going from an Intel to an M1 means that you can scan 1,000 images in 8 seconds, which means that in your case, where you have a 13,000, I think, images, something like that.
Yes.
It's going to be more or less a minute or a bit more. Like 2 minutes.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
To scan all your library. So 2 minutes and you do it once. And then every time you take new pictures, it's going to scan 8 milliseconds. So it's completely painless. I mean, you won't feel anything. If you have a good phone or if you have an M1 on a Mac. So that's amazing. The gap is huge. And I don't think it's so huge in apps. I mean, of course, apps that are doing graphics and stuff, they benefit from that. But on the neural engine, it's crazy.
Yeah, can you stop talking now, Matt? You're going to cost me far too much money.
I have to say, this looks, this does look fascinating. And as I'm notoriously a no photos man, it's not necessarily of great use to me. But I can see. I mean, there's some things in here which I know will intrigue some of our listeners. Alistair loves these things you've got cross app photo annotation, which I'm sure is the sort of thing because Alistair's constantly bemoaning the fact that trying to not so much manage his catalogs because he's very organized with his cataloging, but often his problem seems to be that I've got all this stuff over here from whenever, and I'd really like to move it to over here for use in newer or more powerful apps. But he's always worried. One of his big things is he's constantly worried that all his metadata is going to get trashed because obviously all these catalog things and his keywords and all the other things that he spent years building up, obviously just moving all these photographs somewhere. And yet,
it's very frightening.
Yeah,
you have to trust what's going to happen and what those apps are going to do.
Yeah,
but also one of the things that is interesting is sometimes in our case is to break some of the barriers that some apps have. Like if you take a super pro cataloging app like Capture One, which is an editing app, cataloging app, it doesn't have a map feature, so you can't see your pictures on a map. Well, if you put your Capture One catalogs in Picto, then you get a map for all your images, which is great. Another example is in Apple Photos, you can only have one catalog open at a time, or in Lightroom, it's the same, just one at a time. Well, if you in Picto, you can have all your catalogs, all your Lightroom catalogs, and you can see them all at in the same window. And if you want to edit a specific image, just double click on it and it opens the correct catalog. So we sort of remove some of the frontiers or boundaries that the app makers, being Adobe, Apple, or whatever, have created. And so we tend to say that we set the photographer free from some of these constraints that they can have in those apps by creating something that is above those apps and works nicely with them, but gives you more.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Excellent. And I'm glad to see here. I'm just looking here at your store. Game changing photo organization for the Mac. You can subscribe monthly. You can subscribe annually, which obviously gives you pretty much a 50% discount. Or this is what I like to see, and many of our listeners like, there's a one and done, purchase option. So you can try it out. You can try it out if you like for a couple of months or whatever, and then if you're happy, you can go. And I have to say, that looks, what's that? It's €189 per license for a purchase. I would say that's not unreasonable. Avalanche, very nice, very nice. Well, that's very, very, very good and fascinating. I'm actually quite, you know, obviously because I knew you were coming on, I have had a quick look through this stuff, but I have to say it is amazing and good luck to you. And I hope that we will, I hope some of our listeners will find this interesting and, explore your products. And
I'm sure they will.
And I'm sure we'll get some feedback.
I would say that we're also a small company, so that means that we try to listen to, we listen definitely to our users and even to our non-users, but who are trying the software, and we try to respond within a few hours or 24 hours to all the mails and things that we receive. So feel free to contact us if you have questions or anything, if you want to suggest some stuff or if you have problems using it or whatever.
Excellent.
Thank you for giving me the time to talk about the company and what we do and the passion we have in doing it. And it was a pleasure.
No, that's thank not you, a Matt. Problem. Yeah, thank you for coming on, because we always like to have, developers and founders and whatnot come on. And we've been quite lucky over the years. We've had people from Luminar and Affinity and we've had people from Pixelmator, so on. So it's all lovely and no, thank you. It's been very, very enlightening. And I really like the way that, you're using AI, because, AI or machine learning, call it what you will. Lots of people seem to be doing things with it, which is all very clever. But it's like, yes, but what real use is it in the real world? Whereas Luminar are using it to, as you mentioned, to do, help people, achieve some really nice photo adjustments. You don't have to be a fabulous expert at photo manipulation to be able to achieve, enhancing your photographs with their tools. And this is putting it to a use that I think a lot of people would find very helpful indeed. Well,
it just seems to me that I'm sure we've all said it at some point. Wouldn't it be fantastic if, rather than having to catalogue things, which we all hate doing, wouldn't it be wonderful if something would do it for us?
Yeah, exactly.
Just by looking at the photos. And, in a number of years ago, people would have said, don't be silly.
Yeah, exactly.
But here we are.
Here we are. Yeah.
Well and done, Matt, and your team. Very impressive.
And I like this. Obviously, they've made use. I saw mention of smart albums, which, of course, is, classic use, but they construct dynamic photo collections based on criteria which update constantly. So, you can keep building collections of stuff if it's, particularly if they're based around particular subjects.
Yeah, you can base your albums on prompts as well, which is quite a cool thing.
Excellent. Yeah. Most excellent. Thank you very much. And we'll put some links, obviously, in the show notes. Although the simplest link of all is go to cyme.io and take a look. And there's a link to the blog, which Matt mentioned, which I've had a quick look at the blog. Some fascinating, there's obvious ones, like the latest one here is Keywords and Photo, Let Peak 2 Simplify Your Life. But there are other articles, 5x7's photo format, everything you need to know.
Then you have a section called interviews at the top, just under the blog title. If you click on interviews, then you'll have all these interviews I was mentioning before.
Yep.
If you look at, for example, the third one, Requiem for Pianos, it's a photographer that has been traveling around the world to find pianos that have been abandoned in places that are either in ruins or... Okay. And, yep.
That sounds fascinating.
It's just very poetic, and also, the pictures are just mind blowing. So, yeah, we've been gathering a number of really creative people around the years, and that's part of our DNA as well, to try to push some people that do amazing work.
Interesting. When Dreams Come to Life with Shireen Collette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. Fantastic. So there we go. Look, and then you've got one here, The Story of Pixelmator.
Mm-hmm.
So there we are. Plenty to explore there. Well, okay.
Oh, I was just going to, something that just occurred to me. So when you were trying to, when you were drawing all these things together, particularly all the metadata and stuff, how did you start with to think about, because I'm guessing most programs will actually store all this stuff in slightly different formats and slightly so different ways.
I mean, the technical word for that is reverse engineer, but that's what we did. So yeah, we know how to read a catalog of, I mean, of obviously files and folders, and but we know how to read an Apple Photos catalog and to read the metadata, but we also know how to read the settings that have been applied to an image. It has been edited.
Yeah.
Because if you have cropped an image and you transfer it using Avalanche to a new program like Lightroom, say, for example, you want to retain that crop. And Lightroom stores the crop in a certain way. And sometimes even the coordinates are not expressed in the same coordinate system. Maybe the axes are flipped. I mean, there are lots of ways to describe a crop. So all that we had to understand. And we build all the conversion for every everything from the metadata.
Wow. Do you treat each one individually?
Yes.
Or, mm-hmm, yeah, yes. That's what I wondered.
Individually for the metadata, and then for the settings as well. And for the settings, it's even worse because we have to train machine learning models to understand how, say, I move the slider of the exposure to +1 in Apple Photos. What does it mean if I want to get the same result on that
side? Oh, I see. Oh, gosh, that is complex. Wow.
Not +1, it might be +0.8.
Yeah.
And if the image has other types of edits, maybe it's not +0.8, it's +0.7. So we build hundreds of machine learning models to go from everywhere to everywhere, essentially. So the combinations that are possible. So some of them we don't do well, and some of them we do pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I've never worked with photos, but when I did work in data, a lot of what I was doing was trying to get different disparate types of data, mm-hmm, together so that I can do analysis on them both, as it were.
Yes.
And it's really hard. I mean, it's just hard because people aren't consistent, yep, for a start, which just makes, particularly when you're dealing with, I remember once we were asked to compare to name databases. And I think we only managed about 50%, and we were trying to be reasonably clever with it.
Yeah, but here you have.
But people use different people use different names. People use shortened versions of their names.
Yeah.
I would imagine with photography, it's even more complicated.
So. Yeah, but there's standards. Like the metadata, there are two types of standards, like the IPTC standard, the EXIF standard, which describes how a camera would store the metadata of the spot. And then you have all the IPTC, which is what the user can add in terms of a title, a subtitle, a creator, and you have everything is pretty much standardized. So there are a number of things that you can do. Now, when it comes to edits, it's very different because everyone does what he wants. If you look at Lumina has a sky swapping function. You can change the sky for another one. So you have lots of parameters to that, and if you want to transfer that to the sky swapping that Lightroom has or whatever other app there, it's really hard because none of them has the same way of doing it. So some things are impossible to do. Some are possible, and whenever it's possible, we try to do it.
That's very impressive, Matt. Mm-hmm. I must admit.
All sounds very, very clever. Too clever for me.
An awful lot of hard work mapping things together. Wow.
Like you're talking, you were talking about trying to, mesh databases. Don't even. We used to get sometimes mailing lists,
mm-hmm,
at work when I worked in printing. We'd get these mailing lists, and a number of times you would find that they'd been put together usually in Excel. Sometimes people would, the data would not be in the least bit clean. There'd be invisible columns appear somewhere, so stuff would suddenly move over one column. Which would, if you're trying to build a proper mailing list from that, this is a nightmare. We had to clean them something chronic by exporting them to, CSV and then trying to remove blank fields. But then you've got to be careful not to remove blank fields where it's just because they haven't entered this first name. Oh, God, horrible.
When I first started working for Severn Trent, so Severn Trent are a water company, water treatment company in the UK, mm-hmm. And I worked in their IT department. And when I joined them, they were still using a mainframe for some things. And I remember being tasked with all of their change controls. They'd got a code on for the year 2000. So if you remember, there was a big hoo-ha about the year 2000. Everything was going to break. So they coded all these changes. And they coded them with something quite simple. So year 2K, Y2K, and then a number, 1, 2, 3, or 4. And I remember someone talking me through searching for it for them and saying, just remember, you haven't got to search for those four things. You've got to search for where they've put spaces in it. You've got to search for where they've got the letters in the wrong order. You've got to you've got to search for when they haven't got the number at the end. Yeah. And it was that point, you know, that I realized just how complicated sometimes things can be, particularly if you rely on people to be consistent, because they're not.
Yeah.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. There we are. Right. Okay, so we'll move on to the news of the week. And, of course, as we all know, the big news of the week is the DOJ have decided to file a complaint against Apple for antitrust issues. And we're not going to go into this too much. Apparently, there's a 88-page PDF, if you care to download it and read it, about the complaint. I've listened to various people in podcasts. Of course, the ATP boys had a lot to say about this. To be fair, I did agree with them. One of their core arguments is this is not the way to effect change, as they're not particularly keen on the the EU's DMA, but they all agree that that is at least the correct way to attempt to effect change, and that is, as they put it in short, and I will steal it from them because it's a good idea, as one of them said...
Very quickly, what's this all about?
Yeah, well, what's it all about? Well, as they said, if you want people to stop dumping toxic waste into the river, the simplest way to do it is to write a new rule which says, thou shalt not dump toxic waste into the river. Do not sue them for trying to, try and sue them for breaking some 200-year-old law which doesn't really apply and find them guilty and then try and figure out what you want to do about it. That's
I see.
And their general...
Just being awkward, basically.
Well, no, as they said, if the United States and the Department of Justice have complaints about things that Apple do or have done, that's fair enough. So write some new regulations, enact legislation to prevent it. This whole thing is, it's like they will go to court and it will go on and on and on, and then there will be appeals, and then there will be appeals against the appeals, and then there will be more, and so on. And then eventually, maybe, there'll either be a settlement or a judge or a jury will have to decide what they want to do about it. And as they said, this is not the way to affect any sort of sensible change. Make rules. And this is what they said. We don't necessarily agree with the DMA, but it's the right way to go about it. Say, we don't like you doing this, don't do it, and here are the new rules. And then argue about that after the fact. So there you go. To be honest, if you want to read about it, if you want to hear about it, go and listen to Accidental Tech Podcast. They talk about it at great length, as they always do. Our friend Stephen Sinofsky has written a piece in his Hardcore Software, as always, many pages long, discussing it. And as a man who has experience, of course, of the Microsoft antitrust debacle, he has plenty to say. And Jason Snell at Six Colours has his first reactions. And, of course, Mr. Gruber at Daring Fireball has his own little comments and links to some other reactions as well. And that's probably about all I want to say about that. It's more of the same, Nick. It's, we don't like you doing stuff, so we're going to poke our fingers in.
Yeah, how dare you do stuff within your own software and your own stuff, the stuff that you invented.
Exactly.
How dare you do it, and how dare you exclude other people from doing other things inside your software and stuff that you didn't actually intend in the first place? It just seems bonkers to me.
It is bonkers, and the only sort of thing of merit that possibly could be brought to light is Apple a monopoly? Yes or no? Debatable.
What frustrates me more than anything else is we seem to have redefined what monopoly means.
Yes.
My understanding of a monopoly is one company that does the whole thing. Yeah. Mm. So if you were the only company that made a wonder drug that made everyone live an extra 100 years, and you wouldn't let anyone near the patents and whatever, and that's a monopoly. But Apple isn't anywhere near a monopoly. That they make phones, but so do other people.
Yeah, I know.
They have app stores, so do other people.
Well, it's a bit...
I can't think of any area of their job, of their work, where they are a monopoly. And yet they're being treated like they're a monopoly.
Yeah, exactly.
No, don't get me wrong. You know my opinions about Apple, and I don't agree with everything that they do by any means. But I just think we need to properly redefine what a monopoly is and stop criticizing people for making decisions earlier on.
And as you know,
I don't know.
I just
tie myself in knots when I think about it.
This is why I really did agree with both the title and why they used it for the ATP, which was called Use Your Words. And their definition of that in this context was use your words to make new rules which stop people doing things you don't like. Their main take is we can't understand why you would attempt to prosecute or sue Apple for trying, you know, which is not any way to fix the problems. So there you go. Let's move on from that, because yes, it hurts my head. It hurts my head. And like you, there are certain things which Apple do and have done, which almost certainly are, you know, distasteful and anti-competitive and sometimes, you know, vindictive and spiteful. And those sort of things should not be allowed. But the way to fix it is to tell them not to do it, not to try and... It'd be like... I don't know. Be like trying to sue Netflix for something by accusing them of stopping the British public from going to their longbow practice. No.
yes.
There. Anyway. So let's move on to something a little more interesting than that. But links to all of those if you want to read about those. This is one that Matt obviously brought up before the show. Here is why Apple is negotiating with Google on an AI partnership. This was at iMore, and I'm sure Matt will have something to say about this one.
Yes, I find it interesting because it's about large language model and the fact that Apple is apparently negotiating with Google to incorporate Gemini into the iPhones. There are two things here. The fact that a few weeks, no, days ago, Apple published a paper on very technical paper that describes their state-of-the-art language model that they are building. So it looks like something that's pretty advanced.
I think that was the one. Is that the one we? I think that might be the one we talked about, wasn't it, Nick? We talked about that Apple had published.
It's called M1M, I think, something like that. It's a language model that they described in so many details that it's kind of really so bizarre that usually there's so much secrecy about everything, and here they explain in great detail how they are building their stuff. And then there is the second news, which is about the Titan project and the fact that people are redirected to AI. So you would think that with such a manpower and probably things that have been done already, they would be in a really strong position to have something to add to their iPhone and not have to negotiate with other players. So I don't know. Maybe it's just to put some smoke and then they will release their own stuff. I don't know.
I wonder whether Apple have been a little bit too focused on certain types of AI, and sort of the rest of the world has been moving on around them, and they've suddenly found themselves not behind exactly, but just down another avenue of AI stuff, and a little bit like they used Google Maps on the iPhone before they used Apple Maps. Perhaps,
yes.
Perhaps this is the right way forward, and to use a third party AI to start with, until Apple can get up to speed and do whatever it is they feel they want to do.
But again,
I mean, the fact is, AI, the actual AI subject, if you like, is so broad, and it applies to so many different areas of technology.
Oh yeah,
you could quite easily get lost in one of the little alcoves of AI. And miss the main point, really.
Sure, but if you look at what a company like this French company called Mistral has been able to do in a few months, and if you look at all those research groups that Apple has in Europe, in Switzerland, in many places, publishing papers, working on language model for years now, you would think that they have certainly the capacity and the people to and the knowledge to put something.
That's a fair point.
To put something together in a few months. I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. We'll see what comes out in the what's going to be announced. Maybe at WWDC in June. There's going to be probably some announcements, and people have great expectations to see some AI tools for developers and maybe Apple branded tools and models ready to use.
I mean, the thing with these, I mean, you know, it's a Mr. German rumor, so it could, just because Apple could well be talking to Google. They could be talking to Google for any number of reasons related to AI. To be honest, they could be forming some kind of partnership. They could be. There's a lot of reasons they might be talking to Google about AI other than saying, do you want to be the AI on the iPhone? Although, of course, you know, being the default search on the iPhone cost Google a lot of money. I mean, I forget what it was, but it was a lot more billions of dollars per annum than anybody expected. If you remember, Nick, when that came out in one of those court proceedings, it came out how much money Google actually paid Apple per annum. And it was.
Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was huge.
It was like an order of magnitude bigger than anybody'd ever kind of expected. So there is that. They could be doing that. They could be comparing notes. Obviously, as Matt said, you know, they wrote this very long technical paper about the model they're building and how exactly how they're going about it. And also, of course, Apple have been very careful about the sources where they're getting their training data from. I mean, I forget who it was they paid, but they paid somebody, didn't they, outright, a big chunk of cash to have the rights. It might have been the New York Times or somebody, I forget now, because obviously Google and OpenAI and whatnot have been accused of basically just taking stuff from places without asking.
I mean, Apple have always got that balance, haven't they, between using all the data and protecting people's privacy. So that is always an issue for Apple that perhaps other companies like Google that don't really care about very much.
Might not be. Yeah, I don't know about this. It's an interesting rumour.
It is.
And all sorts of, could be all sorts of things going on. And I'm sure eventually it will come out. But
Did you see the robot video that came out last week?
No,
the one where the guy's talking to it sort of conversationally.
No, I didn't.
No, I can't remember what it was called, the robot. It was something like Robot One or something. And I can't remember who was working on it.
Oh, dear.
So I can't remember an awful lot, really. All I was amazed by was the robot was, they were only showing the top part of the robot, a humanoid robot. And the guy said, give me something to eat. There's an apple on the table. So the robot picks up the apple and drops it in his hand. And then he asked one or two other sort of fairly generic things, which And the robot responded in a very natural way using a large language model. It was very impressive, I must admit. It just shows that this AI stuff is just roller coasting, isn't it? It's just moving on so quickly.
Looks like it might be this one, Figure 01 with OpenAI, speech-to-speech reasoning.
I mean, I think it's fairly clear it's staged.
Oh, yeah.
But even so, it's quite impressive.
Well, we'll put a link to that. I've found one here about it from PC Mag. So we'll.
Yeah, it's a partnership with OpenAI, I think.
Yeah.
Ah, right. That was it. Well done. I'm glad one of us has a memory.
Well, so put that in the show notes. Well, that's yes. I haven't seen that, Nick. So I'll have to watch that.
Not very long. It's only about 2 or 3 minutes long, but it is. It's very impressive.
Oh, there we go.
I think some of the things we've got to look forward to in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yes, could be very interesting.
Maybe not robots, but things that understand us and respond to us in a very natural way.
Oh, yes. I think we're going to get a lot more of that. And it's going to be one of those, possibly, it could well be one of these areas that, you know, by the end of our lives, people will kind of find the idea of something like Alexa absolutely hilariously crude in the same way as, you know, in early televisions or whatever. But
we're not far off. Well, it seems that we're not far off the old Star Trek computer where they just ask it anything.
Yeah.
And it answers in a sensible way.
All we've got to do then is stop them making stuff up.
that is a problem.
I did tell you the story, didn't I, a couple of shows ago about my boy talking to a chatbot, which he was talking to it about his favourite band, and then it said, and then of course, so-and-so member of the band and his solo album, and Joe was like, no, oh, oops, no, that didn't happen, I made that up. Complete. There is no live album by this member of the band. There we go. Such is life. Okay. Is Apple talking to Google? Probably. Are they?
We shall see.
Are they negotiating to put Google AI on iPhone? My take on that is probably not. But it'd be intriguing. You never know. They could be agreeing to cooperate on something. This one is a very silly, but it kind of goes back to something you were talking about earlier, Nick, and also what Matt was saying about things being in different formats or not tidy. This is on iMore. Apple accidentally updates every AirTag in the world at the same time. As it says here, Apple is a serious company of serious people, and with a $1 trillion, you know, multi-$1 trillion valuation, that's not a surprise. We rarely get a glimpse into things behind the scenes. Apple rolls out firmware updates for AirTags in phases to avoid straining every single one of them requesting the download at the same time. Anyway, apparently somebody accidentally set the date for the firmware update to month day 24 instead of month day 2024, which Apple have used previously. As a result, all the AirTags in the world believed or
when you told me this earlier, I hadn't grasped what you're talking about. So basically the year 24, not the year 2024.
Yes, so effectively right. The system thought every AirTag in the world was 2000 years overdate for overdue for an update. So whatever they put in the in the day and month tags, no doubt for geographic areas to push out the update over a few days, they all got it at once. So now, luckily, I'm pretty sure that AirTags have very small updates and the strain was not that big. But imagine if you did that to all the iPhones in the world, that would probably strain the servers considerably. So
yeah, that actually makes me laugh a lot because, I mean, you can just imagine. You could just imagine the writer of the Gospel, Luke, because apparently the Gospel was written about 24 years after Jesus died. So you suddenly get an update on his AirTag and you think, well, what's going on here?
Exactly. So I just thought that was somewhat amusing. Yeah. All the updates all the air tags in the world are 2,000 years overdue for their update. There we go. Just a just a humorous little piece that caught my eye.
Formats matter. Formats matter.
Formats matter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just do it the right way, people. It's year, month, day. That's the international standard. If we all do that, all this nonsense will go away. Anyway, this one's about Apple TV Plus. Apparently, entertainment expert claims nobody's watching Apple TV Plus and suggests its numbers are lower than rivals. Well, colour me unsurprised, because I don't think Apple TV Plus really is trying to compete with Netflix and Amazon Prime. Do you?
It's got a different ethos, hasn't it, altogether?
Yeah, I mean, I personally think it. I mean, they've always kind of gone for quality over quantity.
Yeah, they've never been the biggest seller of phones or computers or an awful lot of things.
Or anything.
That doesn't mean they're not being successful.
No, exactly. No. Ferrari sell a lot less cars than Fiat, but I don't think Ferrari consider themselves unsuccessful. They just have a different market. So
yeah, I think probably saying nobody's watching Apple TV Plus is a little bit disingenuous.
Yeah, and as it says...
It might be nobody if you compare them, the figures together. Yeah. If you sort of domain. But,
yes, I think as somebody somewhere in this short article, I think one of the comments is Apple's got so much money, do they even care if Apple TV is losing money? Probably not.
Well, yeah, true.
True enough. There we go. While we're on Apple TV Plus, I have to say, I have watched the first part of Manhunt. I don't know if you've seen. Oh, well, you're not on Apple TV at the moment, are you, Nick?
I'm not. No.
No. Manhunt is the story of John Wilkes Booth, who is of course famous for assassinating Abraham Lincoln.
Ah, right.
So that's their new story. It's the tale of. It's not about. Doesn't tell you anything about him. It starts on the night, pretty much, of the assassination and goes from there. And that's why it's called Manhunt, because apparently it's a little-known tale. They didn't just catch him there and then. He jumped from the balcony and legged it. Apparently this resulted in a large manhunt to find him. So looks like it's going to be interesting. And then, of course, there's a couple of new ones coming soon. And... yes, I did. I don't know. Did I mention the bloody 100th last week? I think I did, didn't I? Which is the documentary to go with the Masters of the Air.
Master of the Air. Yeah. Yes, you did mention it.
So, do you watch Apple TV Plus at all, Matt?
No, I don't. I'm really bad at watching. I don't have too much time to watch this.
No, I was going to say he's too busy.
Netflix and I don't. But
he's too busy wrangling those AIs.
He's trying to put Disney Plus, I think, onto Apple TV.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. So, and apparently, how much do you think a signed business card of Steve Jobs's is worth? Apparently, about $181,000, according to 9to5Mac. This is, of course, because there was an auction of various Apple memorabilia, I believe, and the Apple computer, Steve Jobs business card, signed by Steve, sold for about $181,000. Go.
I could sign a card, and they could have it for a lot less than that.
Yeah, I was going to say. If anybody wants to...
It went for as much as the stupid person is prepared to pay.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't it just, you know, and what is this worth? It's worth what you can get for it. You know?
Yeah.
How much money is
a bank... That's true of a lot of auction things, though. That's true, isn't it?
Well, exactly. Again, another one of these sealed 4 gigabyte iPhone, original iPhones went for about $150,000. You can't even take the plastic off the box, for God's sake. There you go. So that's pretty much the Apple news. We've got a couple of, I'll jump to the security and privacy because this is an Apple story. This is from Mashable, but you will find it elsewhere. Vulnerability found in Apple Silicon M-series chips, and it cannot be fixed. next. This one was from Mashable, as I say. Hackers can harvest encryption keys from Macs and MacBooks. And it's unpatchable. Academic researchers discovered a vulnerability which allows hackers to gain access to secret encryption keys on Apple computers with M-series chipset. This includes M1, M2 and M3. Now, I don't know how true that is because another report I read said that the M3 is not vulnerable to this. So that you can take your pick as to what you believe. The vulnerability lies in the prefetchers, which predictively retrieve data for use. And the researchers have dubbed this GoFetch, which is a micro-architectural side-channel attack which can extract secret keys from constant-time cryptographic implementations via data memory-dependent prefetchers. All right, that all clear to you?
That's mud.
As it says, I'll skim over the rest. Usually when a security flaw is discovered, a company can patch the issue with software. The researchers say this is not patchable because the issue lies in the micro-architectural design of the chip. And security measures to help mitigate the issue would require a degradation of the M-series chip performance. So they make that sound really, really scary. But I have read more about this, and there's one here from Microsoft News. You need to have access, direct access to the Mac. It's not a remote attack. Basically, I heard somebody talking about this, and it's not like they magically can extract whole keys. I can't remember where I heard this, but basically, they have to kind of guess at a part of the key and then use the prefetcher to see if they can retrieve that part and so on and so forth. So it's not quick, it's not easy, and you've got to have hands-on access to the Mac. And we all know what we say about that, don't we, people? We all say if somebody's got hold of your Mac, you've got bigger problems than whether they can extract keys in very slowly. And, you know, apparently some people say the M3 is affected, others say it's not. I would rate this as a serious flaw, but in my personal opinion, not that dangerous unless you're the head of Mossad or Vladimir Putin or someone like that.
And you're prone to leaving your computer in taxis or...
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Oh, bugger, MI5 are in trouble. No.
Yeah.
Right. There we are. Matt, do you have anything to say on that one?
Not specifically, no. No,
nor do I really. I mean, I just grab these things if they catch my attention. If you're interested in that, and Dougie will probably tell us more about it in the Slack room because he tells us stuff about these things. I personally, at the moment, would not rate it as, obviously it's a flaw, but apparently there's not a lot you can do about it. May or may not affect the M3, and it doesn't strike me as it's not a mass attack vector that most of us need to worry about, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
We'll double back. For the technology news, here's a good news story for the week. A pig kidney was transplanted into a living person for the first time ever, which kind of follows on from the story we talked about, what, a year ago or something, where they put a pig heart into a man who was beyond hope, to be honest. And I think he lived about 2 weeks, if I recall. And this time, the patient, a Rick Slayman, 62-year-old manager with the Massachusetts Department of Transportation, was diagnosed with end-stage kidney disease and is currently recovering well and expected to be discharged from hospital soon. The doctors said they thought the new kidney should last years, but acknowledged there are unknowns in animal-to-human transplants. Apparently, this man had been waiting 11 years. There
yeah,
we are.
That, basically, they discharged him and sent him home with some ointment.
No.
Sorry.
Put the Christmas crackers away. Put the Christmas crackers away. So, there you go. If you want to read about that, CNN Health linked in the show notes. I find these things fascinating. I mean, it all basically follows on from the heart transplant. You can't just take a kidney out of any old pig, of course. The pigs have to be genetically modified and bred specially for the purpose. But so far, that's the first living
kidney transplant.
You know, live pig kidney transplant. And so far, seems to be going well. As the surgeon says here, our hope is that dialysis will become obsolete. Dialysis will be like a ventilator for a patient with respiratory failure. You use it for a period, and then when they're healthy enough, you transplant a fresh kidney, human or xeno, by which he means of some other animal. There we go. We live in a time of wonders and miracles.
We do indeed.
And then the other one I've just put in here, which is watch the humanoid robot talk and complete tasks, which is the one we just talked about, or you mentioned earlier, Nick, which I dug up.
Yeah.
The bigger one robot. So that's pretty much all of it. And the snippet for the week, this one is check out the functional 3D printed Macintosh on Mac Rumors, where somebody has recreated an original, you know, Macintosh. And gone to a great deal of time and effort to create a working computer. And some pedant in the comments immediately said he didn't 3D print the Macintosh, only the case, which is true, but a pointless comment. There you go. It supports 3.5-inch discs. It supports an appropriate Apple keyboards and mice. And there you go. He modified a 10-inch thrift store screen to have LED backlighting and a dimmer knob. He crafted the power assembly, built-in connectors, speakers and other hardware, and designed a mini VMac emulator in Linux. So, and there's a video of him talking about it. And go on. There you go. That's just a snippet because we like people who can be bothered to do such things because they can, don't we?
Indeed.
Because there's no other reason to do it except because you can. There we are. So that's the show. So I guess we'll just mention, of course, the Mission to Seafarers Appeal. You know how this one goes. The Mission to Seafarers Appeal are looking for old but working smartphones and internet tablets to give seafarers far from home a way to talk to their friends and family. Links in the show notes for that. Links in the show notes. And that's it. So we'll wrap it up. Join us in the Slack. So that's about it, isn't it? Join us in the Slack. Yeah. Matt, would you like to, is there, you know, do you, obviously you've got your website. Do you do any socials or anything where people can follow you?
We have an Instagram account where we publish a number of things, sometimes about the product, but often more often about the kind of things that you have in our blogs and things like that. We have a Facebook page, we have a LinkedIn account. Yeah, we do.
And how would they find you there then? Are you under Peak 2 or Syme?
No, I think it's Syme.io. You'll find us. You'll find us there.
Okay. Well, I expect it's linked on your website.
Yeah, there are some links in the footer of the website. If you want.
Lovely. Okay. Well, that's great. Go to cyme.io and you can find links to all their socials. And you can find me on the X Twitter as at Serenak, and that's Serenak. And that's it. So other than to say thank you to Matt once again, thank you very much for coming
thanks,
on.
Matt.
Thank you so much. It's timed right because it wouldn't have been much of a show otherwise, I don't think. News is not stuff that Nick and I are particularly bothered about discussing at great length. So there you go. Thank you once again. And I think until next week, we'll all say goodbye.
Goodbye.
For listening to us here on the Essential Apple Podcast. We appreciate your time. If you'd like to make a small donation towards the cost of our show, please feel free to visit our Patreon or our Pinecast Tips jar. You can find the link links in the show notes. And if you've already contributed or do already contribute, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much. This show is part of the MyMac Podcasting Network, where you can follow such excellent shows as Tim and David of Geeks Hub and also the Tech Fan Podcast. You can find Elisa and Melissa with their most excellent, geekiest show ever. And of course, you can find Guy and Dallas with the MyMac Podcast itself. So why not head over to mymac.com and check out some of the other shows on the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Looking for a show that talks about Apple and Apple products? Then Geekiest Show Ever is for you.
What about Amazon? Google? Geekiest Show Ever is for you.
Mesh networks, distance learning, all kinds of technology, interviews? Yes, Geekiest Show Ever covers that too.
I'm Elisa Pacelli.
And I'm Melissa Davis. Listen to the Geekiest Show Ever on the MyMac Podcasting Network in your favorite podcast player.
Feedback, show ideas, and reviews, always welcome.
You have been listening to the Essential Apple Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time.
But that software is fantastic.
Isn't it?
Wow. I mean,
amazing.
Okay, for my purposes, it's probably a little bit on the expensive side. I mean, I can't see myself subscribing because I don't use photography that much. But
no, but I mean, if you
for
just...
people who do... Wow!
Oh, I mean, yeah! I mean,
absolutely
it's...
brilliant. And the what's it app's about £35, I think. The
Do my
iPhone app?
Oh well,
find my
snap.
Called it. Yeah. I think it's £35, so it's not cheap, but
no. But if you use it a lot,
if you're using it a lot, wow! I mean, some of the things that. Just before, as you came back, I asked him about, you know, how they went about mapping all those things. And
yeah, I caught the end of that.
It just sounds but... such a huge effort to actually get that to work. Just amazing. Yeah, very cool tools, without a doubt. I must admit, it's one of those things a number of years ago. You know, when they were talking about getting rid of, what was the app, the posh Apple one called again?
Yeah, Aperture, that's the one he was talking about.
Oh, yeah, when they were getting rid of Aperture. I mean, I never used Aperture, but when they were getting rid of Aperture, and there have been a number of times when I've tried to find something that catalogues my photos in a way that would be more useful to me. I mean, the way that Photo does it is not bad. I used to prefer the way that the earlier version of Photos used to do it, where you could put it in, like, sort of categories. You could name a group and it would... I think you can still do that in Photos, in all honesty, but it's a little... It's more fiddly now.
Oh, yeah.
I quite like that. But those tools that he's got are just incredible for doing
I mean,
that sort of stuff.
Find My Snap Monthly, £2. Find My Snap Yearly, £8.
Oh, well, hold on. Are these the apps?
In app purchases, thought this is for the Find My Snap.
Yeah, but is it the app you're looking at?
Yeah.
On the App Store. Well, maybe I just didn't see it then.
If you go down to in-app purchases and pop them open.
The App Store. So it's Find
My Snap.
My Snap. Find My Snap.
Image search.
Volume. That's £35. £34.99.
If you go down, what you want... lifetime, but it's got, you can buy it, but like you can do a year for £8 or a month.
Well, I want So I wonder, I don't understand. That's all that's showing on my iPhone.
Oh, well, I'm on the Mac.
Oh, well, maybe that works on the Mac then. If you want to buy it on the App Store, because he said it's an app.
Well, it is an app.
Oh, hold on. Find my Snap image. What does that say?
Image search engine.
And then that's got in-app purchases.
Mm.
Oh, all right. So what? Oh, and the other one is just if you want to buy it outright.
Yeah, £35. Yeah, if you want to buy it
outright. Right. Understood. So that's in that case, that's not bad.
You know, if you want to try it, I mean, £8 for a year is not a lot, is it?
No, it isn't. No, that's pretty reasonable.
And, you know, if you like it and use it all the time, you're going to go, oh, well, I'll have that.
I might give that a try.
You can try it for free anyway.
Yeah.
Not,
I mean, no, I don't mind that. I thought it was just a one-off of 30. I thought I'm not going to use it enough to make £35 It's only going to be on occasion when I need to find something.
But you can try. I mean, I don't know what you get for free.
I'll definitely have a play with it anyway.
Probably worth having.
I love all the AI stuff that sort of just looks at your photos and says, oh, there's some animals here and there's some. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can say, you know, well, show me only animals that have got yellow plumage or.
Yeah.
And that's really clever. That's really clever.
Download on the App Store. Yeah. All right. On iPhone. Right, okay. Yeah, I reckon it's the same. Anyway, there we go. Yes, it works on this MacBook Air. iPhone. If I go change to iPhone. Right, works on Mac, iPhone, iPad, and the Apple Vision.
Okay, I'm just installing it on my phone. Find my Snap image search and see what it says when you log in. I had a phone call last week. I think I told you, didn't I, about three? And they put me on some new contracts?
No.
No, okay. So they phoned me last week and they said, you're coming to the end of your contracts on your phone. And, of course, on my broadband, because that's also 5G.
Yeah.
Now. So at the moment I'm paying £7 a month.
Right.
We can do £13 a month on a 2-year contract. And I said, that's not very attractive. I'm only paying £7 at the moment on a rolling contract, you know, every month. Not every month. Yes, every month.
Yeah, every month.
I can cancel it at any time. And they said, let me see what I can do. And so anyway, he came back a little bit later and he said, I can do you £9 a month on a 12-month contract. I said, fine. Yeah, I don't mind paying an extra couple of quid. That's fine. He said, but I can do better on your broadband, definitely. So he passed me through to somebody else. So I've been paying £24 a month for my broadband.
Right.
And he said, what we can do is 6 months half price. That's £11 a month. I said, oh, right. And then after that, £22, which is £2 less than I'm paying now. And I said, yes, please. That sounds very good.
I'll take that.
Yeah, the only trouble is, since they've done it, my internet started dropping out again.
Oh.
So whatever they've changed, and what's really weird about it, this is very strange, is that I can lose internet on my phone, so I can try to get to a web page and it just doesn't go anywhere, or the A-Lady stops working, but I'm streaming video and that doesn't stop. So what's going on there? How's that working?
How's that work? Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I know video streaming is on a different protocol because they use, I can't remember what it's called now, but there's a different protocol for video, isn't there, on the internet?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't just.
It's not like main web pages and things. It's actually sending it differently. So, yeah, that's weird, isn't it? So I haven't gone back to them yet about it because it's not been too bad. But
that
if
sounds...
it carries on, I'm going to go back to my lady, my contact in their exec team.
And say, what's going on here?
Can you just put it back the way it was?
What have you done?
You can leave me on the cheap deal, but
yeah. Can you? What have you done? Yeah, that sounds almost like DNS because
yeah,
I've heard that when your DNS goes belly up,
it is weird.
Something that you're already streaming or keep working, but you can't go to any websites or anything.
Find My Snap is busy indexing the first 2,000 images. Oh, wow, that's fast. 500, 600, 700, 800, 900, 1,000. That is going through that very quickly. 1,700. Oh, I wonder whether that's the limitation. You can only do it on the first 2,000 images.
Yeah, possibly.
Could be. Okay, I'm going to try something. Let's put a dog. Dog on grass. See what that does. Wow! It's found dogs on grass. That's amazing. There's a picture of a dog.
Yeah, that's probably the limitation on the free one, that you can try it.
Oh, okay. So it says, tap Inspire Me to search using original themes, abstract patterns. Oh, okay. Actually, I don't... Oh, no, they are my photos. Oh, wow. Continue. Well done. We are all set. Let's start. Oh, okay. And then it takes you to the Get More with Premium.
Yeah.
$7.99 yearly, 67 pence a month.
Oh.
That's good, isn't it? Or $1.99 monthly. That's presumably rolling $1.99.
Mm.
So if I close that... Oh, it's still allowing me to search.
Yeah, I don't...
Wow, it's in that time that I've been talking, it's almost indexed all my photos.
Oh.
It's up to 10,000.
Wow.
That's incredible.
I wonder what the...
So let me try another. Oh, let's put church, because there's going to be millions of those. Church. Oh, yeah, it's found loads of churches and insides of churches.
Ooh.
Oh, that's interesting. It thinks a Roman townhouse is a church, but it does look a bit like a church.
Well, I was going to say, the inside of a Roman, you could mistake that.
Even so, that's pretty impressive. Okay, they've all got locks on them, so I'm not quite sure what that means. It says unlock, and if I click on unlock, then it takes me to the subscription model. Oh, okay, so it's showing the first 9, and then after that, they've got padlocks on them. Oh, that's interesting. I think I'm definitely going to have a play with that. That looks good.
Yeah, sounds good.
Cool. Right.
Right.
I think we'll make a move.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got someone on, because I get a bit bored of us, just us.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy having our chats, but
it's nice
to have a different voice on from time to time.
It's also nice to have something that isn't just like the news, you know.
Yes. Yeah.